Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Greer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have Joyce Baker and Ann Skeffington together for 31 years.
Welcome.
Yes.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much for having us. It's a pleasure.
I met Joyce in music school at Sonoma State way back in 1992. We are both in music ed departments with each other. She's a percussionist and I was a flutist. And then we met her partner, Anne, and we learned all about their lives. And the interesting thing is that Anne is British and Joyce is American. And how did they meet? How did these two people meet? And how have they stayed together for so long? Those questions and others will be answered and revealed, but not until after News and Events with Greg Moralia.
I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of March 3rd, 2019. Last week, we told you of a young gay man named Sal Trujillo who was victim of a hate crime that was caught on video using his phone in Salt Lake City, Utah. A 22-year-old man named Carlo Alazo has been caught and charged with one count of threatening to use a weapon in a fight and two counts of assault, all misdemeanor charges. In the cell phone video, which quickly went viral, Alazo asked Trujillo if he was gay and then punched him and called him a homophobic slur. Witnesses seen on the video were shocked. The suspect, who reportedly shoved one of Trujillo's female friends, shouted anti-gay slurs and pulled out a butterfly knife on Trujillo. Later, Trujillo posted the video on social media and asked others to help identify the perpetrator. The video was reshared over 8,700 times. Alazo will not face hate crime charges because Utah's law does not include protections for sexual orientation. But Trujillo has used the incident to encourage others to support SB 103, a Utah Senate bill that would extend hate crime protections to those targeted for their gender identity, race, religion, sex, national origin, or sexual orientation. And in North Carolina, Kanatika Zaire Brown, a transgender woman, is serving a possible 10-year sentence at the Harnett Correctional Facility in Lillington. She's being housed with 38 male inmates. She's required to change and shower with these men. She faces regular harassment from other inmates, but usually doesn't report it for fear of being placed in a segregated status. Zaire Brown was sent to prison in 2017 after being convicted of insurance fraud and obtaining property by false pretenses. That same year, she underwent gender confirmation surgery and a breast augmentation as part of her transition before being incarcerated. Even though she allegedly changed her name and gender, the state of North Carolina refuses to accept either, referring to her by her birth name and gender, and housing her in a men's prison. As a result, the prison is refusing to allow her to be transferred to a women's prison and won't issue her prison-issued women's undergarments. In 2018, North Carolina issued a new policy that allows for transgender inmates to receive appropriate care while incarcerated. The policy reads that the Facility Transgender Accommodation Review Committee will make an accommodation determination based on clinical evaluations, historical documents, and an offender interview. Zaire Brown received her hormone replacement therapy care, but only after months of delay. Nothing else has been provided, and she remains in a male prison. And here locally, Santa Rosa Gaydar is hosting an exclusive event for the LGBT community at Stout Brothers, located at 527 4th Street in Santa Rosa. Stout Brothers is an authentic Irish restaurant and pub offering genuine Irish cuisine and a variety of Irish, English, and American brews. Santa Rosa Gaydar is a casual LGBT social networking group, and you're invited to attend on Sunday, March 10th from 2 to 6 p.m. An RSVP is necessary, and you can do that at meetup.com. Just look for Santa Rosa Gaydar in the details. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And welcome back, everybody. So happy to have you join us tonight, Anne and Joyce.
Glad to be here.
Wonderful to be here. It's been so long. It's really been so long. And so it's wonderful to see both of you again.
Yeah, we can still see each other, too. That's how long it's been.
Oh, we're starting, y'all, for a big night here. So tell us a little bit, just so the audience can get acquainted with both of you. So, Joyce, why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Let's see. I just came off of 2 days of strikes, so my brain is a little bit fried. And other than that, life is great.
Did you say 2 days of strike?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes, I work for Oakland Unified School District, and it's been quite an event and an emotional highs and lows and very scary and extremely eye-opening. It's all over the news, so I won't go into any more than that, but I hope to God that we all get back to work with the kids and we continue on the right path.
So what is it that you do with the kids?
Oh, I teach music to little fourth and fifth grade kids, flute, clarinet, trumpet, a trombone,
drums,
strings, violin.
Wow, everything.
Yeah, we pretty much have a good time.
And how long have you been doing that?
Oh, let's see. About 23 years. I'm about to retire.
When?
Well, if it wasn't for this strike, it would be in May, but it's kind of messing with my retirement system. So we'll see what happens. Mm. We'll see what happens, you know, because every time you don't go to work, it's part of your credits. So we'll see. We'll see how it works out. I hope it's in May. I'm looking forward to it. Annie already has plans to take me away.
Like where, Anne?
Anywhere and everywhere. I'm serious. So we're just waiting to see. I mean, is America the Beautiful? So there's plenty to see here that we haven't seen. And I love the idea of traveling in an RV with Joyce and our dog for a long time. And maybe off to Europe, you know, go back home, see the family, go to some places over there we haven't seen. But it all depends what happens. Nothing is planned at this point.
Yeah. So where is home?
Home is in Malvern, Worcestershire, which is in the Midlands. Called the Midlands because it's the very middle of the country. If you look at a bird's eye of the United Kingdom, the biggest part that's the furthest apart from the ocean is where I grew up. The Cotswolds, people have heard of the Cotswolds. Very country and very beautiful. And that's been probably the best blessing of my whole life, that I've always lived in really, really pretty places. And so you can't live in places that aren't pretty once you've always lived in somewhere beautiful. So that's why California really appeals to me, because it is absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Everything at your fingertips, the beach, the redwoods, and the mountains. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful life here. I'm very happy to have emigrated here. And when I got here in 1982, strangely enough, I knew I'd come home. I didn't know how that would play out, but in my heart and my emotions, as soon as I stepped off the plane, I had this feeling like I'd just come home. Mm-hmm. And so I just went with it. I said, I don't know what this will really mean or how this will show up, but I think this is where I'm meant to be. So I find that very interesting, coming from 6,000 miles away and being a person that was looking for something to live, a nice place to live, that I found it here and immediately at home. And it's been a very good life for me here.
Well, tell us, why did you leave, and did you come by yourself?
I did. I came by myself with $50 in my pocket because I just couldn't stand being at home anymore. And I was at that point of trained chef, so I knew I could always find work. I was just like, I'll just come to the States and I'll get work. Maybe I'll travel and go home. I didn't really intend to stay, but I got this feeling and I said, I got to listen to this and I'm going to stay. And I got a job within 2 days at an English style restaurant. Hello. Because they asked me if I knew how to make trifle. And I said, of course I know how to make trifle. And so I was cooking and I was working, and it was all very easy for me, actually. Down the road, I know you have to ask us more questions about coming out and stuff, but the time I came to America, I considered myself a hetero. And so it was a very interesting journey, because within a few months I came out.
So why did you leave? You were heterosexual?
I left England because I can't stand my family.
Oh.
If you must know, I was like, I need to put some serious geographic between them. And I just didn't want to be that statistic where most people end up living 50 miles away from where they were born. And I said, there's a whole big world out there and I'm going to find a place for me. So, and I had a lot of difficulties with my family and I just need to be free of them. And I knew kind of what that would mean, that I would be free of them for many, many years. And I was, and we've all reconciled now, but it was a lot of family issues.
Wow, you're very courageous.
I was 24. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'll do it now. But I was 24 and I wasn't afraid of anything.
And where did you land when you came?
Los Angeles. I had one friend. I should say I did have one friend in San Diego, so I had somewhere to go to. She and I had been high school buddies. So I landed in Los Angeles and stayed in San Diego for about 4 years and partied down too hard. So then I had to leave.
So you had to come up and party.
I did.
Right?
I know. Well, I came out to San Francisco and you immediately know the difference between San Diego and San Francisco in the 1980s, in the mid 80s, and San Diego was like a one-horse town, and San Francisco was full of cosmopolitan and international and hip. And I just knew energetically it was the place for me. So once again, I just moved and went back to San Diego, packed up, moved up here. And that was probably the last time I was ever so impetuous because I found a place to live and thrive. And I've been here since then.
So you talked about being a chef.
Yes.
And so what are you still chefing?
No. I had about 35, 40 years in the business, did everything from opening restaurants, management, waiting on superstars and catering and everything. Lovely, lovely business for me. It totally suited my personality. But I just didn't really want to be the old person in the business. And it really is an industry for young people. And my darling wife said, we need to buy more property. So why don't you go get your real estate license? And I said, that's actually a pretty good idea. And so that's what I did whilst I was still working. Took me about a year and I got my license. And the first thing I bought was a house for us. And I really haven't looked back because I kind of enjoyed the business. And I've been doing that for about 14 years now.
Wow.
So I'm never too busy for anybody's referrals out there.
So I want to just go back to the chefing part of it because you mentioned your first job you got in 2 days and they asked you, can you make trifle?
Yes.
And so can you explain what that is? I have no idea.
Oh, it's jelly with like pound cake in it and fruit. Then a layer of custard, and then on top is whipped cream.
Oh.
It's divine.
Oh.
I'm happy to make it. Call Anne Skeffington for the recipe.
So the next question I have in my mind is like, okay, so you landed in L.A., Anne, and then you went to San Diego for 4 years, and then you moved to San Francisco, and then now fast forward 30 years, here's Joyce. So
Here I am.
How did that happen, Joyce?
How did that happen?
How did that happen?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we worked together in a Mexican restaurant. Chevy's. Remember Chevy's, everybody?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's still happening.
Sizzling platters and yummy margaritas and fresh tortillas and all that. And a lot of romance in that restaurant.
Absolutely.
So were you on the wait staff?
I was on the wait staff. I was also a bartender. And at some point in walked Anne. And I really was not paying much attention because I was too busy schlepping platters and serving margaritas. And to me, she was just another boss. And me and bosses have a tendency to, you know, we're on opposite sides of the fence, as they say.
Right.
So
she was a boss.
Oh, yeah. She was a manager.
Too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But she was a different kind of manager. At least to me.
Well, say
do
more.
Tell.
Do tell. Just broken up with a friend of mine now. We're still friends, thank goodness, after all these years. But I was with someone for 6 or 7 years, and we parted ways. And at some point, it's 30 years ago. Who remembers? But at some point, we figured out that we were lesbians. And I think one of her manager friends,
Larry,
God bless him, he's now gone, but he worked with Annie at the Chevy's in the Embarcadero and said to Anne, oh, hey, you know, there's this cute little lesbian over there in Marin when you head out there. And so, of course, I didn't know that this was going on, but she came over and started to tease me and do all kinds of things and just, you know, eyeball the way lesbians eyeball each other. And I had broken up with this lady, and I was appreciating, you know, the friendship, because I would walk in teary-eyed all the time, as we do. Oh, no, it's okay now, but back then it was awful.
Aww.
And Anne was, you know, I think I was number 8 on her list of 15.
Ooh.
And so we started to just hang out and get to know each other and in the restaurant. And I was going to Sonoma State at the time, and Annie lived up here, and I thought, well, you know, she's a nice lady. Why not? It had only been a few months. Sure, why not? And get to know somebody else, and I was getting my music credential. It was really cool having Ann live 10 minutes from Sonoma State, so I spent a lot of night up there. Wink, wink. And, you know, it just turned out to be a really simpatico relationship. How did that happen so fast? Who knows? It just, here we are 31 years later, and I feel so surprised and blessed and in love all the time. And how does that, you know, we laugh a lot. We enjoy each other's company. We've grown old together, truly, because we were 32 and still partying all the time. And
so you moved up the ladder quick, yeah, right? From eight to first.
I should explain.
Okay, help me out here.
Yes, I've been having some difficulties in relationships, and I can never seem to find a compatible partner. So I read this book written by somebody about lesbians in the dating game, and how, you know, on the second date, the lesbian shows up with the U-Haul, you know, the old joke and stuff. And it said, look, just try dating 15 people with no consequences. Just tell them that you just want to hang out and get to know all different kinds of people. And so I took the advice to heart. And dated, got my hands on as many people as I could, basically. Wow. And I was up to number eight. And it was when I met Joyce. So that's always been our 31-year-old joke, that I've only got to number eight.
Thank
God. Because I've still got seven more to go.
Okay, now I got it. Okay.
If need be. We can work on that.
Yes. Or she can be somebody else. But that's pretty funny, actually. So that was the quest. And it was actually a very helpful quest, because it stopped me from feeling obliged to be with people, right? Because I got a nice, that kind of nature of mine is like that. I think it was too easy to jump into relationships with people that I should have actually spent a little bit more time looking at before I jumped into relationships, and then they were difficult to get out of. So the dating thing I did actually did help. And I have to say, when Joyce and I first got together, I told her, hey, this is just casual. I just want you to know, because I would tell her about all my exploits anyway. Mm. And she just thought I was a bit floozy. And I thought, well, she needs to loosen up a little bit. And then, you know, it was a really funny kind of combination. And I was like, let's go out. And it was, and then we really did discover we really liked each other. And the first thing I ever did for her was cook her a meal. Right? I remember that very clearly. Mm-hmm. Roast chicken.
That's right.
And
that's
lovely right. meal. And in the middle of the meal, one of my ex-girlfriends called and ruined the whole evening. She was just like difficult. Because she was one of the eight that had fallen for me, and I was running.
Well, who showed up that particular morning?
Who?
Somebody you knew on your list.
Yeah, I love this. This is great.
Well, I do remember Halloween night running into my ex-girlfriend.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, but there was a lot on that list, so
yes,
I suppose
anyway,
you would.
But anyway, they all went to the wayside. They were all just practiced for really being with Joyce. And I have to say, from the moment I realized I loved Joyce, because what I saw about Joyce was she has the qualities of somebody that I've always wanted. I mean, I wrote a list of everything I ever wanted, lost the damn list, and found it like 3 or 4 years later. And Joyce and I went through all these things, and it was amazing. She actually fit everything down to like plays frisbee and all silly little things like that. And I was like, this is amazing that you actually did, you materialized into my life from this list. Because I knew I wanted quality. I had a horrible childhood. I had very unloving and unsupportive people, but I knew what a good life was. And I said, I just don't want to live like that. And I think Joyce and I are very much like that. And we create a good life. Mm. Doesn't take a lot of work if you want it, you know. And I've always believed in being really kind and thoughtful to each other. And I think we do that pretty good. I mean, I know we've had a few fights over the years, but nothing major. Mm. And we've certainly had a few challenges. It's not like it's been smooth sailing. But overall, we really love each other. And the love is incredibly deep. I mean, I don't know if it's appropriate to say on radio, but I have to say the first 2 or 3 years, we barely got out of bed.
Well, you were tired. But
we were tired.
I mean, you know, that's fine for the radio.
I mean, I don't know how we did it. Joy survived on like 2 hours of sleep for years. What a grounding for our, what an incredible grounding for our wonderful relationship. So, and now she's giving me the cut it off thing. Obviously, I've told too much.
Somebody's turning red.
I mean, who's
in
listening?
Here?
Who's listening? Our people. Yes. I mean, it's part of it. If it's good in the sack, then you've got a good time. Better. You know.
So you said earlier that you wanted Joyce to loosen up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So she's like sitting here really red faced. So, Joyce, what's going through your head?
Oh, I'm just having a hot flash. It's surging through my body. Maybe it's all that talk about 2 or 3 years never getting out of bed. Just remembering That'll do it.
So how was it for you when you met Anne at the restaurant, her being right. your boss, and then...
It was very interesting. I've never been one to date a lot of people. Seems as I wasn't necessarily ended up being with somebody for a long period of time. And when I met Anne, she was in her 15 mode. And I was just glad to be, I wouldn't say glad, that's not the right word. I was coming out of, you know, a relationship that was very difficult, you know, to end. Not necessarily that the relationship was difficult, but just that it was endings. And Anne was a boss that was fun to work with, and we got along, and it was nice to have a boss that was a lesbian that I was becoming friendly with. And when she was woeing about all of her women that weren't working for her, I'd be thinking to myself, well, that's because you haven't met somebody like me. But I never said that. I just knew in my heart, well, honey, you just haven't met somebody like me. But, and that, you know, that was just, that was how I felt. And we became friends, and it moved pretty damn quick, actually. But nonetheless, it was a wonderful, fun relationship. And we were at work, and her being the boss and me not, you know, there was a rule at work that the two shouldn't meet. Well, that was ridiculous, because that particular restaurant was a hotbed for romance. Everybody was getting together and getting married and, you know, carrying on. And it was one of the jokes about that particular restaurant. Maybe it was just because it's settled under Mount Tam and all the good things that go on because of the mountain is so, you know, full of vibration and positive influence, and if you believe in all of that. But that was what was going on, and we just hit it off. And we would go and meet before work. We decided that we would have to come up with a code name. And so the code name... Can I actually give it away now?
Yeah, okay. You used to call me at work.
Oh, that's right. Thank you. I would call Annie when she was working, and I would ask for Brenda.
No, you would say it was Brenda.
I was Brenda.
You see, Brenda.
Who remembers?
That's why I'm here, to help her.
We talked 30-something years ago. Okay, but go ahead.
Well, that's right. I would call. I was Brenda?
Yeah.
You just told me that. See?
Yeah.
Wait, hey. Right, I was Brenda, and so then she would know it was me. But they ended up somehow knowing. They would walk in and, what's wrong with you? You seem really happy. And what's going on? Did you meet somebody? Oh, me? No. Nobody. Oh, well, you seem very, very, you know, you're smiling. You're in a good mood. And there's Annie in the back making faces and pulling up my dress. And I mean, this. You know, you marry a Brit, in comes all this crazy British humor and silliness. And
Benny Hill at his best.
Oh, Benny Hill. Yeah, Mrs. Ooh. Annie Hill. Ooh. God, it was a riot. Right? And then the office, and oh, my God.
Sounds fun,
It was wild.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was very fun. It was a lot of
Eventually,
fun.
Eventually, they separated us, though.
They found out, you mean?
No, they found out. They knew for a while, but they sent me off to open a restaurant in San Francisco, the Embarcadero. So
Marin was before the Embarcadero.
Yes.
Ah.
Yes. I worked in three restaurants for Chevy's. Uh-huh. I opened one and worked in two.
Well, how did you end up 10 minutes away from Sonoma State?
Because I was working in Marin and I was looking for somewhere to live. And I think I just found something, a nice lesbian household up in Santa Rosa. And I figured that's fine. Yeah. I can commute down. And being a country girl, I'm always looking for the country, you know. Mm. So I thought that was nice. I lived just off of Farmers Lane.
So you went to San Francisco and opened up Chevy's there, worked there anyways. Yeah, what happened to Brenda?
Brenda didn't follow me. Brenda stayed there because she was still going up to, she was at Sonoma State working towards her graduation, but she was living in
Fairfax.
And then I moved into the city.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That was
I got a really fun apartment with a bunch of friends that we'd all met. 1988 was a very interesting year because we actually made a bunch of friends that we're still kind of friends with. All those years. Interesting place. And I stayed in this really cool place near the Panhandle. And I had my place in the city, and Joyce had a place in Fairfax. And I don't think we were ever apart, but so we just city, Fairfax. And then eventually, somehow I moved to Fairfax and got a little apartment down the street, but I don't remember where I was working then.
You were working
I wasn't
right
in the
town.
City. Yeah,
you
maybe.
Worked right in town.
Oh, that's when I started working at Pucci's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because eventually I burnt out on being a restaurant manager. It's the worst job in the world.
Is it?
It really is. Mm. There's no sympathy. I mean, I don't know if anyone's ever opened a restaurant, a corporate restaurant anyway, but it was like every day, 15 hours, go home exhausted, go back and do it the next day. Not a day off. I was trying to move. My boss wouldn't give me a day off to move. Gave me like 2 hours to move. I mean, it was just like slave labor. And I was burning out. And I remember getting up in the mornings and crying because I was so exhausted. Mm. And I was like 33. I mean, I was 31, 32. It's really strong. I mean, we're at our peak there. But I was, remember that, honey? Remember that I used to cry? Mm-hmm. And I said, I can't take this. Mm-hmm. And so I called my boss. I said, I've got to take a day off. And they just basically said to me, look, if you can't handle the heat, stay out of the kitchen. And I said, well, that's my future with this company? I don't think so. And so I really started realizing that that wasn't the place to go because with that kind of culture, and that's coming from upper management, basically, that's not the place for Annie. So I think I left and I went and waited tables and made just as much money and it was no stress.
Yeah.
And then really I was able to focus on other things like photography, college. I went to college a little bit and just had more free time and enjoying life. And I learned that lesson really young because, and I see it happen time and time and time again with people. They give everything to the blooming job. And you realize in the end, you're only making other people very wealthy and they've sapped all of your essence and you've given everything up and not, you know, it's hard to find yourself again. Mm. And so I'm glad I learned that lesson young. Not that it's been a smooth path to make my income and a living, but I'm still very glad I did it the way I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like you really saved your spirit, saved your soul.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and actually waiting tables, if you're in the right restaurant, is a wonderful business because people are lovely on the whole. Mm-hmm. And they come and go.
We met there.
Yeah. They come and go. If they're horrible, you never have to see them again. And it's quick and over and they leave you money. I mean, what's wrong with that?
This will be a good time to break for our music break. Aww. And you all brought a song and you're going to introduce it.
It is Brenda Russell's song, Get Here. And I don't know if you dear listeners out there have a favorite song that makes your heart tug when you hear it, but this is definitely one of these. And it takes us back to our really early days of it was all get here, you know, when you're desperately in love and you really just want to be with each other. And this song really summed it up for us. Mm. And when we play it now, we still get very emotional. It really means a lot to us. So I hope, dear listeners, that you all enjoy it. Brenda Russell, Get Here.
And you had something you wanted to share about that story, Joyce? No?
If I did, I can't remember now.
Get
And if you just joined us, welcome back or welcome. This is Living Proof with Diane Scher. And we have Anne and Joyce in studio with us tonight. And they have just talked about their beginning years together. And we'd like to go into more of their coming out stories now. So Joyce, why don't you start? Give us your story about coming out, how old you were, how did you have family support? How was it for you?
It was traumatic. When I came out, it was 19, I was in the 70s. Things were very different. And I fell in love with the woman that was teaching the orchestra class that I was taking at Cal State Northridge, because I grew up in L.A. And I knew stuff was going on. I mean, there's some funny stories. I was working at one of those PBX switchboards. Remember those? Mm. And one of the women there took a liking to me, and she started calling my house. And my parents picked up on some vibe when she'd call the house and started questioning me about it. And that was the first time that I actually felt nervous. Mm. That was the first time that I knew something was, I was old enough. I was probably like 18 or 19 that I could recognize that something wasn't right with my parents, though it was right with me, but I knew that it was wrong, and it was creating a lot of angst. I mean, just talking about it is making my heart go pitter-pat because it was very traumatic. And then I remember moving out of the house because I knew once I had fallen in love with my, I guess she was the student teacher of the orchestra or the band. I don't know if it was falling in love, but you know, when you're young and all these emotions are going crazy and you can't really talk about it, at least then there was no talking. So I would go to the women's building in the back of this campus. I heard there was a quote unquote women's building, and I thought, a women's building? Well, what's there? What do you mean a women's building? So I would go and meet a couple of nice women and experiment and, you know, things that we do when we're young in the back of cars, and just finding myself in all of this. And it was exciting and it was crazy, and I still had to be quiet about it. There's nobody I could talk to, not a soul. I could barely even talk to myself about it. But, you know, thank God for the women's buildings in the back of campuses. You know, I wasn't about to go off and kill myself or drink, or I had never been like that, but it was just coming from a very straight, sheltered lifestyle, this was so extraordinarily out of the realm of anything that was even feasible. The words, the philosophy, the dialect, the emotional explosion, you know, just really finding my sexual self and feeling, oh, right. Mm-hmm. Oh, that, now all of this pre-stuff over the years makes sense.
What's the pre-stuff? I mean, when did
growing up.
You felt something different at home before college. I mean, college, you kind of like, okay, here's an opportunity for me to explore this. But what happened like in high school or elementary? When did you?
Well, the story goes that somebody told my parents when we were kids growing up on the East Coast. The story, I think my brother told me this. Thank you, brother. He said that somebody had told my parents, watch out for Joyce. Now, I don't know that these are exact words, but basically, keep your eye on Joyce. Oh. I'm glad they didn't. And because she's going to grow up a little different or something like to that. And I said, how would you know that when I'm 7 years old? How would you know that when I'm 5 years old? How
would
you
know? Takes one to know one.
How would you know that when you're 9 years old? You know, I lived on the East Coast till we were nine, and then we moved out to Southern California. So how would anybody see these things in kids? Of course, now that I'm way past that, I see it all the time working with little children. But I'm certainly not going to say that to the parents. You know, that's for the parents to discover and for the families to deal with together. But times are so different. So I'm sure whoever I see that with would grow up a lot different than me.
So when did you know that something was?
You know, they say this is normal with young girls that they fall in love with their best friends.
Oh.
Well, hello. I had a wonderful best friend, two, matter of fact, and I fell in love with them both. One, we still love each other dearly and talk to each other all the time. The other, we leave each other nice, you know, greetings on Facebook, how you doing, and things like that. You know, we'd go out double dating with our boyfriends, but I was really only more interested to just hang out with my best friend and chit-chat and, you know, be together and talk to each other on the phone all day. My mom would say, you just spent all day in class together and you're on the phone. Like, well, yeah, of course. How do you have that much to say? Well, now I know. I mean, girls, I know we like to talk and whatever. But so that probably was my first experience, but I still didn't know that I was going to be led that way. I mean, I was going out. I had boyfriends, went to proms. You know, one of my boyfriends was the drummer in the drum corps that I drummed with for years. Another boyfriend was the first trumpet player of the high school band. I mean, you know, I just followed that route, even though everybody else knew what? Mm. I didn't know. What do you mean, no? Mm. I used to be called names that referenced that I was, you know, like a boy. Mm. You know, tomboy, yeah.
What?
He, she, things like that. And I thought, what is that? What do you, what? But anyways, you know, that's all in the past. And that's in the 70s and 80s when things were looked at in a very negative way. And when I did meet this person in college and fell in love with her and went home, and I was absolutely so distraught because it wasn't exactly mutual. But that was the first time I felt the pangs of what it was like to be rejected, even though I'd been rejected by guys at some point that I'd liked. You know, I had my boyfriends, but of course I liked other guys and they reject, but it didn't hit like that one did. That one was like, you know, stung like a bee. It was terrible. And my mom was standing by my bed and just going, honey, what is the problem? Don't worry. And I did manage to get out. Well, I really like somebody and it's just not the same and I'm never going to love anybody like that. And my mom was, oh, honey, don't worry, you know, it'll be fine and you have a long, wonderful life and you'll find people and can you tell me more about this? And I'm like,
nope. Mute. You went mute.
Oh,
yeah.
I just like died because I was choked. Mm. How could I say? And then fast forward many years later, on a very high holiday, I decided it was time to come clean because I couldn't stand the dates anymore and the being set up anymore. And I would tell my mom, don't set me up, please. It's hard to tell these guys I'm not interested. Please don't do this, please. And so finally, I just had to say, you know, Mom, I'm a lesbian.
How old were you?
I was 19.
She felt the need to set you up on dates.
Of course. Hmm. This was back in the day. I was from a very Jewish background, very conservative, followed all the paths of a religious household and going to college and meeting somebody and marrying and having a family. It didn't seem out of the ordinary for my circle, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's what we all did. That's what she did. That's what everybody did in our community. So it wasn't unusual, but it was hard to tell her to stop doing that. And finally, I just had to say it's because, you know, I'm a lesbian and this woman that I'm now living with is my partner. I don't know exactly how, if I said partner, probably didn't say partner, words like that weren't.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, I think I probably said girlfriend.
How did your mom take it all?
Well, finally now everything's great, but then I don't wish that on anybody. And I know that it's gone on out there and there's nothing that you can do but pursue your own soul because anything else will set you over. Well, we know what happened, happened then. I don't think it happens so much now, although I am aware that this is California and things are different, but
this still happens here in California. Let's not.
Yeah. Well, we have the ability to talk about it now. And in the 70s, like I said, I couldn't even talk to myself about it. I lost my best friend over it.
So just one more question before we move to Anne. And that's your mother's reaction.
She didn't talk to me for quite a few months. Wouldn't come over, wouldn't answer the phone, wouldn't call me. Took it very personal, thought it was something that she did. My parents wanted me to go talk to the rabbis. They wanted me to get some help, try to find out what happened. And at that time, it seemed like that was what a lot of people were doing. Mm-hmm. Their parents were making them take these particular courses. And I just knew that was, you could set up the best, line them up, but nothing's going to happen, you know. I'm Jewish and I'm a lesbian and that's that. That is that, you know. So it wasn't, matter of fact, it didn't change until Anne and I had our commitment ceremony, and that was in 2004. And my auntie back east told my mom, you've got to go. This is Joyce. You've got to go, because she wasn't going to come. And that changed everything. So thank goodness she came. So now things are where they should be. Took a long time. I'm an old girl now. You know, but
yeah, I think 2004, when Mother finally had a revelation, was the last time she sent a doctor's number for Joyce to go date, because she still insisted on doing that all the way through our relationship. We had a very unvalidated relationship. Came. And it was like the blinders came off, and all she did was talk about the wonderful people in our lives. She had this idea that we would like living in a hovel and everyone we hang around must be drug addicts and lowlifes or something. Who knows? But of course, it's not that case. And so when she saw it with her own eyes and felt the love.
My mom, she took me in the house and she said, your dad would be so proud, and just gave me the biggest hug. I've waited my whole life for that.
Yeah.
So
it was a beautiful moment.
It changed everything, and my mom's quite old now, but I'm very blessed that we can share.
I think we have a pretty good relationship with Joyce's mom. I definitely call her mom, because my mom died in 2004, and I told her, I said, you know, I'm going to call you mom from now on, because mine's gone, and she never fought me on it. And she tells us she loves us, and I think on our wedding day she came over, because everyone came and gave us a blessing, and I think she said, now I have two daughters. It's been one of the bigger challenges of our lives, from so many gay people, having the real family support that you need. And it's so important, because it's a lonely life without your family support.
How was it for you coming out?
Horrible, but lovely. You know, I was 24. I'd only been in the States a few months. And funnily enough, everyone thought I was a lesbian. So it's funny hearing Joyce say that. They know before you know. And I mean, this is the image of me. I'm in San Diego, where the sun shines after freezing England. So I went and bought a motorcycle, because I'm like, of course you're going to ride a motorcycle. No helmet, short hair, doing a man's job. Everyone thought I was a lesbian. So that's really funny, because I had no idea. I'm looking at all the boys still, you know, and I'm going out and partying with all these waitresses and stuff, because the restaurant was called the Tickle Trout, and all the waitresses wore these kind of really low-cut wench outfits. You could see their boobs, and oh my gosh, it was awful in that
Sounds
respect.
Like Chevy's.
When it was Chevy's, like
horrible,
yeah,
things.
And there was one girl really super pretty called Susan Moore, and she was always hanging around me, and she's like, I knew she had a boyfriend, but she really dug me for some reason. And she's like, I really love riding on your motorcycle. Can you take me for a ride? And so I'm always riding her around on my motorcycle, and the woman would squeeze me so tight. I was like, you don't need to hold that tight. We're going to be okay. And it was really funny. And everywhere I was going, where was this Susan Moore? And I'm like, where is your boyfriend? What is going on? And we'd go out dancing, and all the handsome men would ask her to dance, and all the old men would come over, and old fat bald men would come and ask me to dance. I'm like, no, I'm not going to be seen in public with you. And I couldn't get it, because I'm like, in England, we just get up and dance and party, you know. So that part was pretty funny. And I always thought, that damn Susan Moore, she's so beautiful, and all the boys want to dance with her. And all the time, I had no idea this woman was jonesing for me.
Ooh.
And she happened to tell a mutual friend, right? Ooh. And the mutual friend had to tell me. And I'm sitting there in shock going, what? Susan Moore fancies me? It doesn't even make sense, because I'm thinking boys, you know. And I said, oh, I don't think so. Ew.
Your type?
No, well, she was very pretty.
Oh, she wasn't even thinking.
No, yeah. But I was just like, no, what do you there. Do? What do you even do? And so I was like, okay, And me and my friend were out drinking that particular night, and she tells me this story, and my mind is racing because it was like, oh, wow. And I'm also realizing I'm free. I can do what the hell I want. I'm in America. No one's watching me. I'm like, wow. And I'm all confused, but I'm like, I don't think so. And yes, no. Yes, no. More like that. And then I get to go home, and the woman had broken into my house, climbed in the bedroom window, and was in my bed with no clothes on.
Oh, my word.
San Diegans.
This is San Diego. And I'm like, oh dear. I said, well, I actually know what's happening because our friend just told us, and I just want to tell you, I don't think so. I'm really sorry. And then she burst into tears, and she said, I can't stop thinking about you. I'm crazy for you. And I said, but you have a boyfriend. I don't understand. She said, well, I've had girlfriends before. I've had girlfriends before, and I'm kind of bisexual. And I'm like, oh, okay. And she's crying away because she says, I'm just crazy for you and I can't stop thinking about you. And I'm confused, but going, wow, this is kind of flattering. The prettiest girl forever and absolutely gorgeous. And
must have been the accent.
Eh? My mother was British. Maybe that's what it was. That's a scary idea. Anyway, listen, I'm trying to get there. So She's crying away. And then I said, well, I felt really sorry for her because I put my arms around her. Fatal mistake.
Ooh.
Uh-oh. And then I'm like, well, what the hell? And so we kissed. And I was like, OMG.
Ooh.
I fell so hard. And it was like my life. I'm kissing this woman. And in my life, everything went click, 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 click. And I said, that's it. I'm a lesbian. No wonder I went through boys. Like, I ate them up for lunch and breakfast. I hated them after 2 weeks. You know, I mean, I would love them and then hate them. And I'd get out of my life. But I always had the most intense girlfriends. Mm. Just like Joyce was talking about, best friends and stuff, you know. And I didn't like it when they had boyfriends. But I never worked out that I could possibly be a dyke. And so that's my coming out story. And we stayed together for 3 years. And it was lovely. And she, when we broke up, she went back to being straight and has had a boyfriend ever since. And I carried on the merry path of a gay lesbian. And that was my coming out story. And the reaction in my family, well, they weren't very happy to start with that I'd already left and I'm not coming back. And I should add, they're very, very religious. So when I told them, and you see, I was so incredibly happy that I came out. I've never considered it a problem. I'm 24. I'm older. And I was just so relieved to realize that's who I was. Mm. And also had an opportunity to restart my life. That was the other thing I noticed. It's like, you know, I've got to this point. Now I can restart again because I got it. I know who I am. I'm very clear on my identity. And so I called my mum and I said, gosh, I've met this person. If I could, I'd marry her. And she says, her? And I said, yeah, Mom, I'm a lesbian. And she goes, I wish you had called. Someone else had just called me and told me you were dead. That's what my mum told me.
Ooh.
And then she said, you know, when I was your age, I fell in love with a woman. That was the second thing she told me. I'm like, what? My old mum's a lesbian? You know, too many things going on here in my mind. And she said, but of course I decided not to go that path because I wanted to have children. So she pulled this high moral ground thing on me and I hated her for that. Mm. And then it was years and years of not talking. That was the nail in the coffin of our relationship. And it was a very, very hard path back to any form of relationship. But, you know, Joyce did meet my mom a couple of times. And I'm very close to my brother and his kids now. And they're totally hip and cool. But it was a long, lonely path without my family. I would never talk about it, would I? It was just like they didn't exist. And that's the way it was because I knew that's exactly what would happen. But you have to do it. You have to be true to yourself. What choice do you have? Mm-hmm. So that's my coming out story. But overall, I was very happy about it. And I'm actually very proud to be a lesbian because I'm proud to know who I am. And I'm very proud to be married to the fabulous Joyce Baker.
Wow, we're just having a wonderful time in here.
Aren't we
Thank
just?
Thank you both. Thank you so much for your stories.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move about you together as a couple. Like, what fun things have you done that you are proud of?
If it wasn't for Anne, I probably would never travel. Because it's hard for me. Mm-hmm. I find it very full of angst when I'm traveling. But we have done some magnificent things. One of them was one of the really great times that we did was following a friend of ours up for the Gay Games to Canada. And then we also, through the Gay Games, Anne was elected to be the director of photography for the New York Gay Games. So we went to that, and oh my God, that was an absolute blast. And it was really at a cool time because to be in New York City during the Gay Games, and there's so many gay people there, and the whole city is full of gay people and lesbians, and they're all athletes, and everyone's rah-rah and such a good mood. And we were welcome everywhere. There was never an issue, never a problem on subways, on buses, on walking the streets. And I never felt more affirmed for who I was and who I was with and what we did. After leaving the Gay Games in New York, that was it. I figured, if you guys can't get over it, it's your problem, period. It was fabulous, and that it was so much fun. Oh, my gosh.
Time. Yeah, there's nothing like being in like Yankee Stadium, packed, and then seeing all the athletes march in with all the flags of the countries. I mean, you feel this incredible worldwide community, and it just stirs your blood so deeply that you just never forget that feeling. It was magnificent. Those are good. Mm-hmm. And we've actually had some wonderful trips to Europe. Joyce said when it was our 25th, I said, honey, where would you like to go for your 25th? Well, I thought she was going to say somewhere in America. She goes, I want to go to Italy. Italy. So off we went. And we did, our theme was lakes and music. And we went to all lakes and music festivals over in Europe for about 2 or 3 weeks. And it was lovely. And we really fell in love with Northern Italy and Venice, and you know, I mean, just incredible places. And it's so great that we've gone together because we have these joint memories. You know, traveling's fun, and I do love to travel, and I've traveled a lot by myself, but there's nothing better than an ideal traveling companion, and Joycey certainly is that.
And she drives like a European, so that really helps. One of the scariest experiences when we were trying to get around a roundabout in Venice, and you couldn't get out of the roundabout once you got in.
Ooh.
It's really true. Just like the movies where everybody's zooming it around as fast as they can. And so we had to time it. And so we knew where we had to get out because we wanted to get over to the island to see Venice. And we were on the outskirts. So Anne's driving and driving. She goes, how am I going to get out of this? I said, well, all right. When I say go, you just hit it and swerve to the right as fast as you can.
So
we're going around and around, and I'm watching the timing. And I said, okay, now. And she hits it, and we just
right across all the traffic.
Like through all the traffic to get out.
Wow.
And that was fun.
I've seen videos like that. I just cannot believe
it. No, I don't know how, when I really know how to drive in Europe, it just comes back over me, and she lets me do all the driving, and I just wing around everywhere.
Oh, except for the time we went home, her first trip back. Oh, I'm going to drive. Great, honey, you drive. There we are in the little town of Malvern, and Annie makes a left-hand turn right onto the sidewalk. No, onto the wrong side of the street, and we ended up on the sidewalk.
In the car, on the sidewalk.
In the car, on the sidewalk, because she took a left-hand turn
into
the right-hand lane.
Yeah.
And I'm screaming. Mm. I won't do that here, but I was. And so the only place to go was the sidewalk. And there we were in this little roller skate of a car zooming down the sidewalk.
Wow.
So we've had some fun.
Yeah, sounds like it. And wow, sorry to say that time would fly by.
Well, 31 years is a lot to account for. Well, no, we don't mind doing a part two if anyone's interested.
So just briefly, 31 years
you've
been together. What advice you would say to someone who are starting a relationship, who's been in 20 years in a relationship, whatever, that made your 31 years so successful? What would that be?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm hesitant to give advice to anybody, but I would say from my experience that Joyce and I are very compatible, and we're kind to each other, and we don't take out our frustrations on each other. And there's a lot of thoughtfulness, and we kind of have the same ideas about how to live and what's important to us. And we have a couple of animals that bring us a lot of joy and bring us together closely. We have a lovely dog and cat. We've always shared animals. So we have a lot of shared interests. And I just deeply love Joyce. So don't go get into any relationship unless you deeply, deeply love somebody. And I will say just real quickly, Joycey made me wait to move in with her because I was the kind of gal to move in. So once I was clear that I was in love with Joyce, I was like, let's move in. And she said, no, if we're going to be together forever, let's just enjoy our engagement and our dating. And so we didn't live together for like 2 or 3 years. And as much as I hated it to begin with, I got to appreciate it after a while. And I think that was really good. So by the time we finally moved in, there were really no surprises in personality and a way of living. So that would probably be my most important piece of advice. Take your time. If it's going to be forever, enjoy the whole process, because living together is very domesticated, whereas romancing and dating is not.
Joyce, would you like to add?
I wanted to be romanced. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get the cards and the flowers and be taken out, or to take Annie out. And for a long time, I wanted to have a courtship. And being lesbians, I think we are very quick to move in. I really didn't mind Anne saying that she wanted to keep it casual, because when I finally got that, I'm like, great, let's just hang out and have some fun and go out and get to know each other. And you know, we live close enough that we spent time at each other's homes. And other than respecting each other completely and letting each other be autonomous, there is that point that you come together because of that respect and that autonomy. And I mean, I'm a musician. I'm not around a lot. I mean, I work all day with the kids, and I do play a lot, and I'm gone a lot, rehearsing, playing, rehearsing. I play with 3 or 4 groups around the Bay Area, and I hope when I retire, it'll be even more, because that's, you know, it's a great thing. Anyway, and in the past, I haven't been given the okay to have to do that. And music is, it's so much a part of my life, right? Mm. I think I need to feel the sense of freedom and not feeling handcuffed or being afraid to follow what is inside of me. And Annie just was always like, go, do. And I think, really? Shouldn't we be fighting? But there was never any of that. And so that respect of who we are individually really is important, to let each other be. And if you find the right mate, I think that's key right there. And laugh as much as you can, completely, all the time. Even the middle of a good old heated argument. You got to laugh. You got to laugh.
Well, thank you both so very much.
We want everyone to remember, like Anne and Joyce, that you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can support others in being free and living their lives authentically. It's another way to help the world. This is Diane and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month. Until then, good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. Then you can do the same. Yeah. What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never.
Tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Music with Cheryl Cabanuck. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB-FM Radio 91. Northern California Public Media is proud to be an official media partner of the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival, happening March 28th through the 31st. You can find out more about the film schedules and festival activities at sebastopolfilmfest.org. You're listening to Radio 91, KRCB-FM Windsor, and K215-CQ Santa Rosa. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Afropop is next.